Hello, I'm Joe Cordell of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. Here are a few quick divorce tips that we provide our clients. Number one, don't move out of your house just because your wife tells you to. Remember, that's your house too. And number two, don't blow through the financial statements that you file with the court. These are key exhibits, and they often make or break your case. And number three, watch the social networking. Expect your wife's lawyer to do a thorough online search. And incidentally, this is a two-way street. Now, a bonus tip. Partner with your attorney in assembling evidence. You're one of the two leading experts on your life and marriage. Your attorney needs your input to achieve your goals. And finally, talk to your attorney before taking action. Good luck.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's San Francisco area attorneys. A partner men can count on. Online at CordellCordell.com. Offices in San Francisco, San Mateo, and San Jose. Se habla español. Legal services available in English and Spanish. Kimberly Llewellyn, licensed in California.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, Joe. So the Bank of Japan thinks that their QE hasn't worked and hasn't managed to spur the economy. And now Haruhiko Kuroda wants to work closely with Prime Minister Abe to adopt some form of helicopter money, which is to print money for fiscal spending. Joe, do you think this will work?
Well, I think what we do know, strictly using monetary policy, negative interest rates is not working. So it has to be a combination of fiscal and monetary policy, more fiscal than monetary. So I think Japan is kind of doing what China has done in the sense that they're pulling both levers when it comes to monetary and fiscal policy. So you got to do both because one doesn't work without the other.
I think some policymakers around the world, for example, the German finance minister, as well as the Bank of Japan governor himself, has balked at the idea of the term helicopter money. From a systemic viewpoint, do you think this is dangerous?
It is dangerous because you increase debt. It's kind of like a Hail Mary pass. It's kind of the last available option, so to speak. So I hope no government, whether it's Germany, China, Japan in particular, has to use helicopter money, because then you're basically out of options if that doesn't work. So, you know, we were in negative interest rate territory. It's not working. But I think I'd like to see more fiscal and monetary stimulus, big bangs, work in tandem before we went to helicopter money.
So monetary stimulus, Bank of Japan Governor, again, Karuda, says that this hasn't worked for the last 8 years. And now this helicopter money wants to, I guess, build more roads and bridges. Can the government do something more creative to spur economic growth?
Yeah, I mean, they could cut the consumption tax, the sales tax, make it easier for the consumer to spend, give them more incentive to spend when it comes to their income. You know, Japan is not an export-driven economy. The consumer makes up around 60-65% of GDP. So how do you get the Japanese consumer to step up and spend? I think another thing they do is get more women involved in the labor force so they have income, spending power, more productive resource. So they're not out of options, but they're certainly out of imagination if you're just going to use monetary policy.
And Joe, how does this make you feel about the situation in the rest of the world? Because this seems like a kind of white flag being waved as to whether quantitative easing has worked in spurring growth around the world, except for the United States. So, and what does this mean for markets?
Well, first of all, I don't want to see Japan go down this route and have helicopter money. And it is kind of a last-ditch effort. They're still a very large economy. But I feel a little bit better because there's structural problems in Japan. Aging population, declining labor force participation rate, absolute decline in the population, no talk about immigration and so forth. So I think this is kind of unique to Japan right now, and I don't see it going to China or Europe and the United States. I think they can generate growth, generate more inflation than deflation. But you've got a big economy in Asia still struggling 20, 25 years out. Whatever they've tried hasn't worked, obviously.
And talking about the United States, we are in the thick of the results season. Do you have any sectors that you'd like to stand out?
Yeah, we like the technology, because there's growth and value there, and there's also dividend payers. So technology is doing well, particularly with social content. There's a lot of innovation happening. A lot of mobility, e-payments, e-health, e-everything, really, when it comes to the upside. But, we're talking about the large cap stocks. and energy is getting beaten up here, but I still, and there's a lot of value in energy. So if you're, you've got a like 2-year horizon, we're buying energy stocks. And we're also looking carefully at financials, because we do think it's, you know, the banks are very, very well capitalized. They're another dividend playing story. If the Fed does raise rates once this year and moves, continues to gradually, incrementally raise rates in 2017, the banks are going to do very well.
Yeah. With technology, what do you think about that deal that Uber made with Didi Kuaidi in China? Does it say a lot about what's, you know, the kind of very bloody competitive situation in China, and as well as the wider economy in China?
I think, you know, it's this way for Uber to kind of participate in the market. I think they kind of threw in the towel. I don't really know the specifics of the deal, but it is very competitive in China, particularly in that, you know, kind of e-commerce, e-space, you know, internet-driven demand, internet-driven supply. So, you know, I think I don't know the nature of the deal, but it just goes to show you that, you know, they're still looking to partner with foreign companies to help drive the growth, and the growth will be there. So, to me, I think it's a it's emblematic of the competition in China, but also the wherewithal to do deals with foreign companies.
And with oil, we see that oil supplies and stockpiles are at an almost 100-year high. Are we going to see another choppy year for oil prices again, having gone down to about 20-something to right now about 40-something? What do you think is the next move?
I think, you know, there's more downside pressure. I mean, I also thought, we talked about this, that when we were above $50 per barrel, that was too far, too fast, too high. So I'm not surprised we pulled back a little bit here. You know, maybe we go $38, $35, but I don't see any risk of like going below $30 if we saw earlier this year, because there is demand still out there running at 4 or 5%, particularly out of, say, places like India. And also there are supply constraints still in effect. So to me, you know, I think the bottoming out process is around $35, $40, but you know, any bad news on the energy sector right now, this is an investment opportunity for investors to step in if they've got like a 2-3 year horizon.
And what does this decline or this downtrend do for the rest of the commodity complex, since they have done very well this year as well?
It's taken some steam out of a little bit, but, you know, agricultural commodities, there's just an oversupply of wheat, corn, soybeans, and so forth. That's got to be worked out still. The whole issue would be if we get global reflation, right, so more fiscal stimulus out of Europe, out of Japan, out of the United States, that's going to come after the election. You're going to see commodity prices, the base that they're building, they're going to move higher off this base. So any pullback, whether it's, you know, copper, silver, anything related to base metals, that's a buying opportunity, because I do think global reflation on the fiscal side is going to be more of the story for 2017, and the markets will price that in earlier rather than later.
Thanks so much. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist for U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management in New York.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Summertime tips and fun facts from Paul, Kristen, and Dexter at Total Wine & More.
If you're topping off your burger with grilled onions and blue cheese, pair your work of art with a spicy Malbec.
Nothing beats a buttery Chardonnay with grilled corn on the cob. I'm ready to find you the perfect bottle of white for your next get-together.
Pack up the cooler for this weekend. We've got canned wine and beer ready to throw on ice.
Now with 9 locations in the Bay Area, visit our newest store at Stevens Creek Central. Shop online at TotalWine.com. The selection is ridiculous. Cheers!